Kaderatia è franco-algerino, ha origine berbere, è vissuto in Congo e vive a Berlino. Non è un caso che una delle parole cui ricorre più spesso per descrivere il suo lavoro sia fold, piega, linea di passaggio, di divisione e congiunzione al tempo stesso, spazio liminare a cui assegna una valenza quasi sacra. In questa intervista, alla luce del suo più recente lavoro Open Your Eyes, ci parla di universalismi, di riappropriazione e traduzione culturali, delle origini e del terreno comune tra i plurimi modernismi. Si scopre così, ad esempio, che la funzionalità non è solo un'idea modernista occidentale e che Le Corbusier molto ha studiato l'architettura vernacolare africana e soprattutto quella di Gardaia, Algeria del Sud. Iniziamo però con Holyland, un lavoro del 2006, e The History of a Myth, The Small Dome of the Rock, due lavori in cui la dimensione sacra non può prescindere dalle sue manifestazioni architettoniche e dal valore loro assegnato dalla storia e dalla memoria.
The relocation of a site-specific project, especially in this case of Holyland, is definitely not that much relocated. I think that when I decided to install the piece here in this part of the Continua Galleria, I had actually other possibilities to install this artwork, but I definitely wanted to put it in this place, in the garden, because it brings something else than the first presentation of Holyland was. The first things that it brings, for instance, is that as it's located actually under the trees, the deal was to find positions for the mirrors in angles in which from the ground, when the viewer is in front of the mirror, he has more reflection of the sky than the trees, which in a way is a break, is a totally break landscape for this kind of very cliché landscape of Toscane that you have on the back. I like very much this. I like very much to break the cliché. The second thing that I think is the most important in this entre guillemets relocation is that when I installed it for the first time in Canaries Island, it was on a beach. Here, these mirrors looks like graves, like if it would have been an old, very old cemetery. My aim was exactly this, because I like very much this area in the history. I mean, my second passion after art is history. But the history of Toscane and the history of the name of the Galleria, Continua, the idea of to continue, to be continued. My version of Holyland here is both a sign of the past, as a cemetery of both what has disappeared, what will remain of this, and in which way we can bind the past to the future. This piece is a kind of this, is a kind of bridge. I mean, this is the function of mirrors. From ages, mirrors work as windows from one point to the other, and generally to a utopic point. I think again the idea of this is the Holyland title came from the idea that I spent time in a city in Israel that is called Eiko, which was a Templar city. We call them in French les moines soldats, soldier or priest, during the crusade, were fighting. I love very much the idea of this city of Eiko, because I like the idea to how the human's mind and is able to develop myth and beliefs about, in this case, about the ground, the land, like if the land would be holy. The second step of this word holy has to do with the architecture and the shape of the graves. They actually come from the Byzantine shape. They are neither Muslim nor Christian. They are Christian from the Byzantine era. And I think that this idea of both the reference toward past and the future is something that I like to summarize as holy, as an in-between space in which we are today. I think we spend all our life in an in-between space, in a kind of fold. And I think that the fold is very interesting, because the fold is what separates these parts and at the same time bind them. So this walk has this holy function. The Dome of the Rock, it has to do with this reference to both the holy and also the memory of through, for instance, architecture. Basically, this work is a small bolt, a real one that has a silver color, and on top I put another bolt that is more goldy. The size is no more than this in my fingers. I put a small camera that amplified the size of this in 22,000 more. So when you go to the installation space, you see a big representation of this small bolt that looks like an architecture, and obviously the reference to the Jerusalem Islamic architecture, the Dome of the Rock. Again, the fold, what's happened in this work is that the most interesting is neither the small bolt nor the big representation of it, but more what's happening between, how this is possible, what references, what reflection, what critics I'm doing through this work. I think architecture has nothing to do with history, but with memory. Let me explain you. Not all of them, but generally architects produce responses, answers, while the artist produce questions. Of course, not all architects. I mean, Renzo Piano, for instance, I don't know, good architects are producing both questions and answers, but there are not a lot. But generally, architects produce answers. Answers to whom? Answers to the power that order the project of architecture. Because an artist can work and produce his work by himself. He's not waiting for some command, unfortunately. An architect depends on this. So the question is, as soon as you know that architecture is producing answers from ages, like the Islamic buildings that were ordered by the order at this time, by the power, my question as an artist is to understand if the architecture that I saw today is really the project that has been ordered by the power who paid for this, or the mythologic perception of something that I'm watching, I'm appreciating sometimes because of the history. We are in Italy now. If you take the fascist architecture of Mussolini, there are some interesting projects. But people generally said, no, this is fascist architecture. Because the reading of this architecture is, for me, is fake. It's fake because of history. And this happened for everything. So the Dome of the Rocks is just, for me, a re-evaluation of this architecture, a break icon of it. Because the popular beliefs, especially here in this case in Islam, has done that this monument is the most represented after the Kaaba in all kitsch representation in the Arab world. So I broke this icon, showing this huge 3x4 meters video projection, which is in loop actually. I don't know if you know about this. The bolt was in the room. I'll tell you later about this. But this representation of a so holy and celebrated monument in a very not important stuff like a bolt is something that I like very much. Is this idea of the breaking icon. Now let me explain you about the loop. How this installation works is a dark room. You go in the dark room and you see this projection. And when you walk, the floor is moving a little bit. And you see that the pictures you're watching is moving. So immediately you think the camera is here. And then you start to look for the camera. And then you find the camera because it's in the corner with a small projector. And you discover this very small bolt. And then you go there and you touch it and you see the screen doing like. So it's a live projection. This is the second step of, for me, the important issue of how to break an icon. Because it's not only representing it. I remember that when I showed this in Dubai, people that were thinking, oh, this is a projection, they were totally disappointed and almost shocked when they discovered that the projection, the beautiful projection, the glittering projection of gold was actually a small bolt, not important, on the floor. So this is a political piece. I think the notion of ugly neither belongs to the inhabitants nor to the people like us who observe this. It belongs to a logic. There's not an issue of ugliness, actually. I mean, the poorer is a house, like Shantytown, the more functional it is. And it what's happened with the Team 10, the movement of architect that in 1959 they strongly broke with Le Corbusier, Mies van der Rohe and Gropius. These architects like Roland Simonet and Chad Ratchwood and Candilis, and there were 10, I don't remember all the names, Di Carlo, all these people, especially Simonet, Simonet has an interesting anecdote, interesting history. He was building for the French government in Morocco, and he discovered that at the end of the day, the Arab workers that were working on these buildings were stealing old materials, old piece of wood, old corrugated roofs. And then with his assistant, one day he followed them at the end of the day, and he discovered 3 kilometers from the building site that these countrymen that were working in the building site, but they were not from the area, all these men were building their homes. They were building shantytown. And the day after, he came back to the shantytown and he discovered that all the urban system that has been respected or designed by these people were very close, I mean, almost similar to the one of the Arab Medinas. He was impressed. And after this, he asked some people to visit their home. And inside the home, took measurements. The measurements from the floor to the ceiling, from each wall. He took all measurements and he discovered that all these measurements were almost the same of Le Corbusier theory, the modular. So the idea of the functionality that seems to be invented by the modernism theory is a natural one. Architecture is, as we said in French, le bon sens. When Le Corbusier went in Algeria to visit Gardaïa, a city on which I worked a lot because I'm very interested by vernacular architecture in Algeria. When Le Corbusier went there in the beginning of the 30s, he discovered this. And there is another interesting issue to answer to your question about this idea of ugliness or not in a home. There's an architect that is almost an artist, Italian, who was producing a lot of interesting theories in the beginning of the, at the end of the 60s. I think his name, if I'm not wrong, is Ugo La Pietra. Ugo La Pietra has developed a concept on which today I'm continuing in the following of his ideas. He's the reappropriation. The idea that the space is something that has to be reappropriated, like if it would be the next step for humanity. He's the reappropriation of spaces. I mean, all this natural way that human has to build, to reappropriate, as you saw in my slideshow, to repair the reality. And Roland Simonet said also about the shantytown, he made the difference between the shantytown and the very old, ugly, dirty, unsafety building that we called in French les taudis. Roland Simonet made the difference. He said the shantytown is much better. Because the shantytown is the idea of an house that will come, une maison en devenir. It's a step, it's not a hand. Whereas the house, the dirty, ugly, old house, is the hand. Happened in Algeria with Le Corbusier. I mean, I talk quite a lot about this in lectures, but nobody really knows about this in a contemporary art. It's a thing that many people know in architecture field, because the bibliography is huge. At this point, it's definitely not a legend, it's real. Le Corbusier spent 6 weeks in Gardaïa, in which he produced an incredible quantity of drawing and sketches and photographs. And then he spoke about this also. He was fascinated by this village lost in the middle of the Sahara. It's a green dot in the middle of the desert of Sahara, and these people that arrived there at the end of the 11th century have developed an incredible architecture that was both a military architecture to protect their place from the enemies. The second thing is that the place is totally adapted to the climate, you know, to the environments, because they had to fight against the tough
very tough environments.
The architecture of Gardaia is not only about houses, it's about functionality. Everything has a logic. There are some examples, what he called the free facade, for instance. The free facade is the idea that a wall do not have any decoration, just some holes. This comes from Gardaia. There is another interesting thing which is called the roof, le toit terrasse, the roof terrace. The roof that became a place in which you can have... This didn't exist before this trip. Especially because in the desert, people use the roof at the end of the day. So it's a place in which they spend the end of the day and sometimes they sleep here. A sort of open sky room of the house. The slideshow speak about this. The idea of the slideshow is, as I called, at the end of the slideshow, there is one slide which said archaeology of the human body. I do care more, actually, to be honest today, about the archaeology of modernism than about postmodern theories and altermodern theories like many people speak about today. This is not my cup of tea. I'm fascinated by history, as I told you, and I think that the most important in the South is to understand and try to figure out what really come from where in order to maybe imagine what will remain of this. What I like very much in the story of Le Corbusier going to Algeria at the beginning of the 30s is that for me it's another way to appreciate modernism, both because there is obviously a political act. You can't say that this is not political. I mean, this white guy going to Algiers, at that time a colony for France, giving lectures at the Algiers University and then going to the south of Algeria, what's happened in his mind to go to Gardaia? Nobody used to go there at that time. It was very isolated. Until now, it's isolated. Le Corbusier read a book by a French ethnologist whose name is Marcel Mercier. This book has been published in beginning of the 20s. This book is called The Urban Civilization in the Mzab. It's the area in which Gardaia is located. And the people who live there, we call them Mozabites. When he went there, he read before this book, he had the book. So he knew about this aesthetic, this very particular aesthetic, this very unique, pure, elementary architecture. What I like in this very important moment in history of modernism, because after this trip, the aesthetic of Le Corbusier changed definitely. And by him, the aesthetic of modernism. The Mexican Luis Barragán met Le Corbusier in Paris. He stayed 2.5 years in Paris with Le Corbusier. Just after he arrived, he came back from Algeria. And then, I mean, Le Corbusier was a speaker. He used to give lectures a lot, so he spoke about this. So from this point, this aesthetic has been spread all around the world. The reappropriation. As a son of Algerian parents that has my history, as somebody who lives in Congo 3 years, going back and forth between his kind of African Berber culture and French, I would like to show to people an alternative of the South, of the Occidental South, that we are living now since what we call the century of enlightenment, le siècle des Lumières. In this slideshow, I think that it's important today, especially because the world is changing, to show that culture has definitely not one way, the West way. When I showed that African people that repair objects broken in a very rough way, this is not rough, this is an ethic. And as an ethic, bring an aesthetic, their aesthetic. And the summum, I mean the sublime of this aesthetic, that some fetish, some sculptures, when one eye falls down, they change the eye with something else, which I think it's totally unthinkable in Occidental mind, because the Occidental mind is following the idea of everything has to be symmetric. You know what I mean? What is important in, I don't know if you remember, in the slideshow, at the end there is a series of African images that has been done by a photographer in the beginning of 20s. This work is the last one, the only one that we know today in Africa, and that gives us the information of, actually this was the title of his book, L'Afrique qui a disparu, Africa that disappeared. This photographer, his name is Kazimir Zagórski, was Polish. Well, it's a long story, but after the when the Bolshevik took the revolution, took creation, after the First World War, he went to Africa. He went to Congo, actually. And he established himself as a photographer there because he was originally from an aristocratic family in Poland, so he could not come back because of communism. But this guy has a passion, photography. And I don't know how. I mean, this is a totally unbelievable work. I mean, he spent a lot of time in the deep Africa to shoot with his camera all these people that have a very strong corporal, very strong body expression, like scarification. He wrote about this. He said, this is the Africa that has disappeared. So this doesn't exist today. This is over today. What is interesting to put in this slideshow is in parallel to the Occidental aesthetic of, exactly as you said, symmetry, the classic symmetry, the, I called it the myth of perfection, is that something has existed and that has disappeared. But here also, the Occidental power has erased it. The First World War for me is important because it's the end of the 19th century. After the First World War, a new world starts, the modernism. The First World War was a war of, a long war of fighting, bombing, and after the war, millions of people wandered, came back home. And it's interesting because at the beginning of the modernity, in science, the idea of modernism was the first experimentation of, again, the idea of perfection. So all these people that have a broken faces were maybe the luckiest of them. And actually, all these people were they were lucky because the necessity of modernity at this time, especially in science, made that the doctors and the institution took care of them in order to experiment. So you have all this evolution of modernism, of surgery, that actually today, we are totally in this world today with the excess of aesthetic surgery that especially women, but also men now, do, from the boobs, the breast, to the lips, to the Botox. I think this idea of this project is criticizing this. But behind this, there is something more important, which is totally political. I think that the big failure of modernism is that justifying any kind of experimentation that aim at going to perfection, it's actually building utopias. And the world we are living in, it's more and more and more utopic, not realistic at all. Whereas I think that in opposite, this idea of, like in Africa, this idea of each body has its own expression is totally what we missed in modernism. We missed our identity. The idea of translation is very close to the idea of the reappropriation. When in a fabric that is a rough material, a local material, made with raffia, on the back of this small occidental fabric, there is a hole. It has many holes, and all the holes has been recovered with a French fabric, toile de Vichy. Symbolically, this is very interesting and strong, because this is the appropriation of a good that comes from abroad and from modernity, and its integration in a local element. This is the translation. You know, there is, by Achille Mbembe, a thinker from Cameroon, very interesting thinker, Achille Mbembe, who said, when the first sailormen from Portugal came to the African coast at the end of the 15th century, they thought that the African people were stupid because they used to exchange, to make big business with them by exchanging gold and ivory with piece of glass and small piece of broken glass and mirrors. Today, we all know that all these pieces of mirrors and these pieces of glasses has been immediately put onto the eyes of the fetishes and onto the belly of the sculptures, of the holy sculptures. So they were not stupid at all. It was just an exchange of values. The glass was charged with the spiritual values. And today, all these objects are in museums, which is ironically the answer of this. The translation is this. La translation, c'est ça. It's a translation of something that comes from abroad and by giving it a new values in the local culture. if you reread the work, it's universalities. And this is a reference to Gilles Deleuze, actually. Gilles Deleuze was working on this idea of there is not one universality. There are universalities. The thing is that how to find a way to bind them, how they communicate between them. Well, I don't know. I think that what is interesting in this project is that he's neither speaking only about the West as a universality or the non-Occidental part as another universality. But maybe to finish with Deleuze also, he described the necessity that we have today to find the fold between West and East, between extreme, opposite and paradoxical sometimes worlds. I just want that people at the end of this slideshow think about, okay, what the artist wanted to tell us here. And the first thing, I hope they could think that way, is maybe the artist want to teach us that the more important is what's happened in between these worlds. Is this possible that we can reinvent a world that would be the world in between the West and the East?
Radio Papesse.org.